doing that Steve Urkel Christmas musical animated
musical.
Film. I need that, man. I need that. I need it. I need it so bad. I love Family Matters so much.
I remember when I was like a very small child, like 3 years old. I remember my mom and dad like laughing hysterically because I did an Urkel impression that was just the "Did I do that thing?" And I was like 3 years old, and I would do that, and my parents were just like crack up hysterically at me doing a Steve Urkel impression. I remember recording it on this like crappy little tape recorder and like listening to myself back, like I can do the impression. It's pretty
man,
funny.
Steve Urkel. That's another one of Steve Urkel's another one of those like characters where like everybody has a Steve Urkel, right? Like everybody has a Steve Urkel.
Right.
I remember we was that? I guess you could call that charade. It wasn't really charades, but. And you know what's so funny? The story I'm about to tell is exactly how Jaleel White got his job as Urkel. When I was in fifth grade, we were playing like charades in the class, and it was my turn, so I got up there. And I think everybody they had to act like something or do something, and everybody had to guess what it was. So I got up there, and everybody was just kind of looking at me, and I went like this, and then I like rolled my pants legs up, and I like. Pulled them up here, and then I did the little stance, and then I said, "Hey there, Carl!" And then the entire class erupted, "Urkel, Urkel!" Mind you,
okay, amazing.
So in fifth grade, I would have been like 10, 11. So this was like when Obama was elected, first elected, not second. Jeez, but. Yeah, the Family Matters had been off the air for like 10 years by then, but all the kids knew who Steve Urkel was. And that's how Jaleel White got his job as Steve Urkel, at least to my knowledge. I think, because I don't know, they wanted like a funny kid, but he actually went into the audition and rolled his sleeves up and he brought the glasses. Like he did all of that. And that blew everybody away. And they were like, oh, we need this kid. Like, we got to do this right now.
Doesn't he have some branded weed now? Is that a thing that
he has?
Yeah,
Purple Urkel, baby. You could get it. I can't, man, because I'm not out there.
I'm going to look that up.
When I get out there, that's the
Google,
first place.
Where
I'm
do
going.
I get Purple Urkel?
Where do I get it? I think
thanks,
you could Google. I think you could get it delivered. I think.
Hell yeah, I can. I can get anything
can,
delivered.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a great way to live.
Yeah. That's a great way to stay in shape. You ever see that Family Guy thing with Trisha Takanawa? She's interviewing this guy, this local guy who's like I think he was either riding a bike or he was jogging, and she was saying like, "It looks like you enjoy your exercise." He says, "Yeah, you know, just hit the trail, go this way, go that way, and it's a great way to stay in shape." And then she asks him another question. He's like, "Yeah, well, you know, I'm just trying to get enough living in before the cancer that I have kills me, and it's a great way to stay in shape." And he keeps doing it. It's a great way to stay in shape. It's a funny bit.
Oh my god, that's great. Oh, all right. Well, should we move into the show?
Yeah. Can I do it? Can the theme song? Which way is it? Is it this way?
You do it. You tell it where to come from.
Theme song.
I've been watching them for years. It's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a Family Guy that sucks. With a father from a hill, a burger family runs amok. The show of spies is the same guy, except he totally say f***. End of verse.
Let's watch cartoons that curse.
What the f*** is up, everybody? Welcome back to Cartoons That Curse, the podcast where we talk about cartoons that say swear words. Welcome. Everyone say welcome in your cars or at homes where you're listening to my good co-host and friend, Tariq. Tariq, how you doing?
I'm all right. Got the coffee on deck, got the water on deck, so I have options.
Hell yeah.
For this episode, thank you to everybody in your homes for saying welcome to me. I know you did it out loud because I trust you all. How are you doing, Johnny?
I'm doing pretty good. Honestly, life's pretty good right now. I feel good. just been where I had a busy week, but I'm pretty happy these days, and things are going good, and we got in to do the pod today, even though it was kind of hard for us to get it together, but we did it.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the final 10 episodes of Archer season 3.
Yeah.
Cause we talked about Heart of Archness last week, which you should check out. Mm-hmm. But although if you're listening to this in audio format, there's a good chance you'll only hear us talk about like 5 of them, cause we're going to split them in half. So that was an announcement last week. If you didn't hear it there, you're hearing it now.
Right.
We're going to start to, for the sake of our own sanity, talking about what we're going to record a full season at a time, but we're going to release them in halves every week so that we have a little more time to watch our cartoons. But don't fear, if you want more content from us, we're also going to be launching a Patreon very soon where we talk about movies, probably not necessarily cartoons that say swears because there's only so many of those movie wise. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you want to hear us talk about the Paddington verse, the most important cinematic universe that exists,
Shrek-verse, the second most important.
Yes. Definitely below Paddington, though. Okay?
Right, but it's like here with it. Like it's pretty. You know what I mean?
Are we going to cover Shrek the Halls, Tariq?
Oh, I've never seen. If we cover Shrek the Halls, we got to do Scared Shrekless. You know what that is?
And we got to do. I think I get Shrek, the idea.
We got to do Shrek 4D. Which was the ride at Universal that they put out on DVD.
Oh. So, but I don't have a 4D TV. Can I watch it?
Yeah. I think the DVD comes with glasses. I think. I don't remember.
But wait. 4D? How can I have a 4D TV? Does it smell bad too? What's the deal? Does it travel through time? How does it work?
I hope so. That would be awesome. What if it like... What if it comes with something that you got to put in your couch that like shakes your couch when like the ride moves?
Ooh. That's like they do have movie theaters like that, which is pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah. I had some friends that went to go see Us and I think they felt like the rabbits.
4DX. They just released a bunch of rabbits in the theater. That was just part of it.
Yeah, that wasn't
just part of it.
There were no other reports of that. I think you guys should call management.
Some dude in the front row was eating one of them. It was gross.
I feel like he was coming right at us. I felt the blood on me. When I walked outside, there was all this red stuff. I didn't know what.
Yeah, it was so weird. And half of the audience looked exactly like us, but they were wearing red jumpsuits. It was crazy.
They paid real close attention to detail. That Jordan Peele is a visionary, I tell you.
He's really good, man. Speaking, do you see that? Do you see the poster for his new movie? What's it called again?
Oh, it's some,
got it. Is it it's nope? Such a good is poster. It's nope. Some, it's just called Nope.
It's Nope. Okay.
That poster
is
great.
It's a funny title.
It's a cool poster, though. Like, I don't know what the hell that movie's about, but that poster, I'm there day one just because of that poster.
Yeah.
I'm in.
No. I think, man, who's the, I don't remember the male lead. I just remember Kiki Palmer's name is up there.
Wait, who is it?
Nope.
Who is in Nope?
It's funny that we're talking about Nope.
Oh, Daniel Kaluuya.
I wanted to say that, but I thought I was going to be wrong. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, and Steven Yen. That's great. What a good cast.
Jeez, yeah, wow.
It's a good cast. Wow.
They all going to act their ass off in that, boy.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I saw Candyman.
Oh, did you like it?
Candyman's good. I like Candyman. I liked it a lot.
I got to check it out. I have not seen the originals, so I want to watch the first ones before I go see the new one.
I get you. I watched one of my favorite podcasts is, I guess you could say Dead in Hip Hop, but they have different branches. They do another podcast called Is the Mic Still On? They do another one called Frames Per Second, where they talk about movie. They do movie reviews and stuff. And I watched theirs live the other day, and like one of the guys, Mike, he had like, because he's a big horror guy, so there was a lot of things about the movie that he like had issues with, and so it's interesting hearing that, because I'm not big on that, you know what I mean? So like, I just kind of went in and I was like, all right, what you gonna do? And then when they did what they did, I was like, I like what you guys did. But he's a big fan of the first one, so he was like, no, why the hell did they do this? And this doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess that doesn't make sense. I didn't, you know what I mean? But I liked it. And it's fucking, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's one of the best looking movies I've seen in a really long time. It's gorgeous. Hell yeah. There's so many, you know, it's not really giving anything away. The Candyman is literally part of the zeitgeist at this point. But, you know, you say the name five times in the mirror, right, and then bro pops out. There's so many. The director, she killed that. There's so many.
Nia DaCosta, like, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I didn't want to mess up her last name. So, yeah.
Exactly. I might have said it wrong. I hope I said it right.
She smoked that. Because there's so many just, like, brilliant, like, mirror shots. Like, and like they,
hell yeah,
they play with that crazy. And it's like that movie, if there's anything, if there's one thing everybody can agree on, is that that movie is gorgeous and everybody acted their asses off. Everybody, yeah, was super believable, and that thing's good. And it's the first, she is the first black woman to have a number one movie in the American box office, which
amazing
is super rad.
It's gonna happen again for her too, because she's directing the next Captain Marvel,
right?
So it's gonna be the first and second.
Right. Yeah. And I'm glad that because it was supposed to come out last year, but then, you know, the world, right, exploded, and I'm
because
glad
they want people to see it in the theater,
right? And I'm glad that she didn't, like, she was really just like, nah, this has to come out in the theater. And I'm glad, yeah, it didn't. I would have had a good time if I watched it in my house, but I had a blast in the theater. Like, hell, that, yeah, is a theater movie if I've ever seen one.
Dude, I was just talking to Mikey about this. Mikey is not here today, unfortunately, but I was just talking, yeah, to Mikey about how gearing up, because the Matrix 4 trailer is going to drop soon. And I'm a big Matrix fan, but that movie is going to be one of the simul drops on HBO Max. And I'm like, how could anyone not want to go to see that in the theater? Like, you got to see The Matrix in the movie theater.
Right,
you can't sit on your couch and watch it alone on your TV.
Right,
you have to see that in the loudest, biggest screen possible with a bunch, mm-hmm, of other people. That's how you do it.
Right.
And I feel like movies like that, or movies like horror movies, are so much about feeling the audience reaction around you, like being a part of the audience's, like, collective reaction. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, absolutely, yeah, I'm glad a lot of these filmmakers are saying, no, this is only going to be in the theater. You got to, right, watch this.
Audience movie reaction, yeah, is like, audience reaction can make like a bad movie, like a really memorable experience. Cause, yep, like, I don't want to tell this story again, but me and my friends accidentally snuck into 50 Shades of Grey when we were in high school, and that crowd was hilarious. Like, it made that movie mad. It's super rad. When I saw the Tupac movie for the second time, because I saw it in theaters twice on the same day, again on Axe, the crowd the second time also made that movie hilarious, because it was pointing out just like all of the stupid shit. That movie has a lot of really stupid shit. There's a line in that movie that me and my friends Steven and Blake on the Sketched Around pod, we make fun of this line so much, because it's like, it's so stupid. Tupac's album is called All Eyes on Me, and, mm-hmm, there's a scene in the movie where he's looking at him and Suge Knight are like looking at pictures for the album cover, because they, I guess, like, Tupac just had his photo shoot, and looking at pictures for the album cover, and I forgot what he wanted the name to be originally, and so he said it out loud. He's like, I'm thinking of calling it yada yada yada, and then Suge Knight says, nah man, your album title should be something that you're feeling. Fake Tupac says, because that's not actually Tupac. Fake Tupac says, I feel like everybody watching my motherfucking moves. All eyes on me. And then my man, when he went through, he saw it in the movies with us, my man in the back, he said, that's not how it happened. That makes no sense.
Man, that's how a lot of those music biopics work, though, right? They, like, they need to dramatize everything. They need, yeah, to make it like the most
sucks,
you gotta add tension. Like, this is where it happened. This is the moment it happened.
They all have moments like that, and I hate when they do, because which, yeah, one has that? Straight Outta Compton. fucking love Straight Outta Compton, but it has another, it has a moment like that where Cube is, it has a couple moments like that. But the one that annoys me, because this is just something that you don't do. I have written many a script and I've never done this. We're going to get the Archer, I swear, I promise. Don't time stamp it.
No, it's cool. Let's keep going. I still have more. I've still got a couple tangents I want to go on based on this combo. So don't promise them Archer yet.
Right, okay. Yeah, that, and don't time stamp it and let them know where Archer starts either. Archer starts here right now in the middle of this Tupac
discussion.
Yeah,
that was rude.
Where are we? Oh, Cube. So yeah. I've written many a script and I've literally never done this before in my life. It just makes no sense. This is why this one bothers me. There's a scene where Cube is typing on a typewriter. Well, not, I guess not a type. He's typing on a computer. He's, you got knocked the fuck out. Hey, babe, Friday funny, man.
What?
I have never... said a single line out loud while typing.
That's so funny.
You can hear a pin drop when I write.
Have you seen the comedy Walk Hard? Not Walk the Line.
No.
Not the Johnny Cash movie.
That's the
Walk
that's
Hard.
The fake biopic, right?
It's the fake biopic.
Yeah, I haven't.
And
but
it's starring.
I've heard about it all in college.
Dude, it's starring John C. Reilly. It's basically rolling in all of the biopics into one. It's like Walk the Line. It's Ray. It's got like all of these different elements from all of these different biopics. And it so perfectly and amazingly deconstructs what all of those movies do while also just like playing on it in such a fun and funny way. But also it's got so much actually fun music in it. It's like all comedy, but it's like good. It's good, catchy music. And it is... so funny. We should watch that together. Honestly, that movie is so good. Highly recommend to anyone who hasn't seen Walk Hard.
My friends have been talking about it literally all college. Because I think even while we were in college, just like, we were in college, a bunch of biopics would come out. So like we would just have, we would have biopic discussions. Extremely often. Like one of my roommates, Noah, he couldn't stop laughing when I told him that the Jesse Owens biopic is called Race. He thought that was the funniest title for it. And I guess it is a really funny title if you think about it. But I never thought about it like that.
Yeah. And, they knew what they were doing.
We saw Bohemian Rhapsody together. Did you see Bohemian Rhapsody? Yeah.
I didn't. I saw clips of it. And I don't know. I don't know if I'm ever going to watch that one. You fan? You like it?
As someone who... knows absolutely nothing about Queen whatsoever. Well, I mean, not whatsoever, but like besides like the songs everyone knows, I guess.
Yeah, the yeah, yeah.
You know, like Love of My Life and shit like that. But like, I thought it was all right. Like, I had a good time in there. Like, you know what I mean? It got me interested. And
yeah, yeah.
Anytime a biopic can make someone who is not a fan of the music listen to the music for a little bit afterwards, I think that's a W.
It did a good job. Yeah, that's true. Here's my I've seen some clips of it. I felt like Rami Malek was maybe a little felt a little more caricature of Freddie Mercury than I wanted him to be. But
I get you.
The thing that annoyed me so much, and this really isn't the movie's fault or anything, but like one of my exposures to that movie was when he was nominated for Best Actor and won that for Best Actor for that role at the Oscars. But when they played, they always play a clip, right? They always play a clip of the actors performing to showcase their talent before they go up. Yeah, because it was him lip syncing to the real Freddie Mercury. He wasn't acting in it. It was just him singing Bohemian Rhapsody. And Freddie, so it was just Freddie Mercury singing and him at piano lip syncing. And that annoyed me so severely that they would choose that clip.
Yeah, that sucks.
To do that. Oh, well. You know,
I think he did. Then again, I
don't think he's a bad actor. I think people liked his performance. People liked it enough to give him that award. I haven't watched the whole movie, so I can't really judge.
Didn't the movie win like best editing? That's something I think it did.
Yeah, that was egregious.
Fam. All right. So when it got nominated, I seen the movie months ago. I didn't remember, like, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
And then when it won, I saw somebody on Twitter post just like this
that
one
clip,
specific
that scene
that
that
I remember
so bad.
But like I watched the clip and I was just watching it. Then I called my roommates in the room. I said, "Yo, come here." And then like we watched it on my phone. I'm like, "Was it always like this?" Because like I don't remember seeing this one. I feel like if I saw that on the theater screen, I would have threw up. Like I don't remember looking at that. I don't remember
it
looking like that.
That is one of the few scenes of the movie I've watched through its entirety, mm-hmm. and it is baffling. It was like as someone who does a lot of editing, it hurt my head. It hurt my head to watch that scene. And then for that person, I think it really sadly just proves how undervalued those technical categories are at those award shows, because they vote for them. They don't vote for them based on the actual editing. Like why did they choose that movie? Like why did they choose Bohemian Rhapsody? They always movies that have music in them, like, or that are about music always get the sound categories, even though that isn't necessarily have much to do with those, you know, with those actual movies.
Yeah.
It's weird. People like, I think there's too big of a pool of people in the Academy voting for that stuff who don't understand the technicalities of each thing. I think they should narrow it down. They should narrow down who gets to vote in the Academy to what their categories are so that mm-hmm. they really understand the technical know-how. You know what I mean? Like if they're part of those unions, they should be able to vote for those things.
So what did Baby Driver win? Because I felt like it should have won editing because they fucking shit blew my mind. But like, did they just opt out and give it like a sound thing? I don't know.
It might have only...
It came out the same year as Dunkirk, so it was screwed.
Yeah, but I think it did it win according to this.
What did it win?
Oh no, it was just nominated. It was just nominated. It was. I think it was screwed because of Dunkirk. I think so. But it was nominated in three categories that it deserved, which is sound editing, sound mixing, and film editing. All three of those nominations. All right. I don't think it won them, but it didn't. It won different awards, but Baby Driver absolutely deserved all three of those nominations. Maybe deserved to win at least one of them.
It was just a fucked up year. Well, not for that particular film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because of what?
Dude.
Because like, I think about Baby Driver blew my mind, but like Dunkirk like shook the planet. Like everybody was like, shit. Like, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah,
I
but like it. The sound mixing and sound design for the tequila scene is like...
Some of
the
best
on the planet, man. It's so good. It's so good.
Oh, are you serious? Can we do a fucking Baby Driver episode?
Let's do it for the Patreon. We'll do it for Patreon. I have it on my shelf right back there. I got it
on the shelf over here somewhere.
Hell yeah. We'll talk about all Edgar Wright stuff because Edgar Wright's one of my favorite directors. I love that guy.
Right. Because there's definitely some I haven't seen.
You haven't seen? Have you seen Shaun of the Dead?
No, I haven't seen all the ones that everybody has.
You haven't seen Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, or The World's End?
No.
We're gonna watch those.
You balled your fist up. Hey, people on Spotify, you can't see it.
It was me.
Johnny just shook his fist at me.
No, it wasn't shaking my fist. It was me being like, I get to show him these movies. Okay. Yes, it was a yes.
Right.
No, I'm excited to talk about those movies with you. They're so good. And you've seen Scott Pilgrim, obviously.
Yeah, that's over here too.
Okay, so you've seen those. And you haven't seen the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy, as it's called, the Cornetto trilogy. And then he's got a new movie coming out.
I know those Shaun of the Dead guys are in Phineas and Ferb.
You'll like those movies. They're really good, and they actually are like incredible rewatches. They have one thing that Edgar Wright's really good at is like this like sort of planned payoff in his writing and in his dialogue. And so like every one of those three movies has, I guess they were also co-written by Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright. And so there will be seemingly innocuous lines at the beginning of the film that are just like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, this is just good dialogue. But almost every single thing in the first act that every character says is set again in a new context later in the movie.
Love that.
And sometimes in like ways that they don't draw attention to, but it will like, mm-hmm. like I've watched Shaun of the Dead probably 20 times. And every time I watch it, I catch a new one where I'm like, oh my God, that's from the first act. It's like, it blows my mind. Yeah.
They do that in Baby Driver. And when I caught it, it fucking shook my world.
That's when, right. That's Edgar Wright.
Flicking
thing,
through the, when
yeah.
he's flicking through the TV and like, it's like
Monsters Inc.
Like Little Rascals. yeah, he says you are. And he says them all in order throughout the whole yep. movie. And I was like, oh, and like, I think the Monsters Inc. one is the only one that clicked for me the first time I saw it.
Right.
Because Doc literally says, stop quoting Monsters Inc. Yeah. It pisses me off. So like, yeah. that's how I caught that. But like, I watched it again. I was like, oh shit. Wait, he says literally all of these in order. Like it's, that shit is brilliant.
Dude, you're gonna like his films. They're also just really well crafted. Like he's just such a meticulous filmmaker. He's so good. Mm. And he's got a new one coming out this year that looks like a horror film called Last Night in Soho. Yeah. And it looks awesome.
Caught the trailer during Candyman. They played a lot of cool trailers during Candyman. I'll say that too.
Oh, you saw the trailer for that was before Candyman? Hell yeah. I want to see that trailer in the theater real bad. That movie comes out 2 days before Halloween. I can't fucking wait. Ugh. Anya Taylor-Joy, man, she's really good. It's gonna be great. I'm stoked.
See that new Halloween trailer?
Yeah, man. I actually have been kind of not necessarily on a kick, but I'm in the beginning of a Halloween kick because until the other night, the only Halloween movies I had seen were the original and the last sequel/reboot that they did. That was technically just a sequel to the original. And now this one is a sequel to that one. I had seen no other Halloween movies other than those two. And so the other day, for the first time, I watched Halloween 2, the original Halloween 2. Which is good. Good movie. Good. That's a good sequel to the first Halloween. It literally takes place immediately after the first one. It's just like the rest of that night, which is pretty cool.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah, it's a good movie. So I think I'm about to go through and watch all of the Halloween movies I've never seen. But they weirdly, I don't know if you know this, the Halloween movies have like three weird separate timelines. So
sounds like it's going to get gross.
It's a pain. So like Halloween 3, I don't know if you know this, Halloween 3, unrelated. Halloween 3 is just a separate, unrelated story that does not have Michael Myers in it.
Why do I feel like I knew that? I feel like
it's like a commonly talked about thing, I think. But so the timelines are, the three timelines of these movies are Halloween 1, Halloween 2, Halloween 4, Halloween 5, Halloween 6. That's the first timeline. Then they made one called H2O, which takes place 20 years later. And that is just a sequel to the second one. So it goes Halloween 1, 2, H2O, and then I think the last one in that is Resurrection, and then that's another timeline. Okay. And then with this new series that came out, it's just a sequel to the original, so it's Halloween, and then this reboot/sequel that came out is also just called Halloween. and then the new one is Halloween. Yeah, it's annoying, like the Shaft, like that new Shaft that came out.
Candyman just did it. Like exactly.
It's a common thing with it seems to be a common thing right now, but. And then this new timeline, so it's going to be Halloween, and then the new one's Halloween Kills, and then they're going to do one more called Halloween Ends, and that's going to wrap out that story. So three separate Halloween timelines, all starting with the original. But if you've never seen the original, worth watching. It created the slasher genre. It's like it invented it, basically. And it will feel a little like, it'll feel like, oh, that's all this was? Like, that's all Halloween was? But it's because it just birthed the whole genre. It was, like, the first to do it. And I think it's a good movie. Yeah, it's good.
That's like people seeing The Simpsons and going like, oh, wait, he just kind of, this was the bad kid? All he does is call his dad by his first name.
Yeah, he said, eat my shorts.
Right.
This
is the rebel-like shit? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I think the thing that draws the most attention to that is in the cartoon War South Park where Cartman's talking to Bart and he's like, one time I cut the head off a statue. He's like, wow, that's super hardcore, dude. One time I killed this kid's parents and fed them to him in chili.
That's such a good joke because it literally tells you how far we've come in just like that short period of time.
And that was a season one thing. The head, right?
That's back half of season one.
Amazing. Good stuff. There's a whole bunch of other tangents I want to go on, but we should probably start talking about Archer.
Let's stop playing with the emotions, man.
All right. The one last thing I'll say is that if we do Shrek the Halls and Scared Shrekless, and then we also do the Toy Stories, that means we also have to do the Toy Story specials, which there are There are 2 + 3 shorts. And there, have you seen those?
I have seen, damn it, what's the one I've seen? Is it
Toy Story of Terror, Toy Story That Time Forgot, and then the three shorts?
I've seen Toy Story. I've seen Toy Story of Terror and Toy Story That Time Forgot, actually.
Toy Story of Terror, I really think rules. Is great. Yeah, it's really good. Rules. And it's like it's a Jesse story. And I think Jesse is such a good character. Love Toy Story of Terror. It's really good. So we'll talk about those for sure. It's good stuff.
Right.
Let's talk about Archer. The shorts are really good. Small Fry is one of my favorites. And Partysaurus Rex is really good. The one where he's the bath party. It's so fun. Okay, we got to talk about Archer. We've been talking for 30 minutes. It's okay. We're good at this. We're good at talking about stuff. Okay, so we're going to talk about the last 10 episodes of the season. If you didn't catch last week, we talked about the first three, which is Heart of Archness. Interestingly, I learned today is that there was a whole miscommunication between FX and Adam Reed about this season, and that the Heart of Archness thing was supposed to be its own standalone thing. And then they were also expecting 13 more episodes for season 3. Adam Reed thought that the 13 episode order included the Heart of Archness trilogy. So he was trying to get 3 more episodes together to get a full 13 episode order for the season 3. And he couldn't do it. So they eventually just cut it back down to 13 and kept going from there. So, the fact that Heart of Archness feels separate and the fact that we did it separately here on the podcast, I think all lines up real well and worked out because it was produced separately. So, and honestly, the first episode of season 3 feels like a good season premiere to me.
It really does. Yeah.
And I always remembered it as being a season premiere, even though technically it's the 4th episode of season 3. But I always remembered it as a season premiere. But The Man from Jupiter is great. It's the one with Burt Reynolds. It is the Burt Reynolds episode. Archer meets Burt Reynolds in a bar on accident, and it turns out he's there to meet his mom for a date. Burt Reynolds is dating Mallory Archer. And honestly, right, like the first thing off the bat that I loved is that just Burt Reynolds is a great character.
Him really rad. And I love that. They made him super rad. I really love that.
Me too, man. He's like so likable, and he's so like, he's cool and confident, but also just like so chill, even in the craziest situations.
He's like, you almost hit me. No, you didn't.
No.
I almost hit you. No, you didn't.
I don't think so. That's so funny. They also, and this also is just like a good character building episode for Archer, because it's kind of all about his weird relationship with his mom and like how he has all these weird hangups about his mom having her own life. And it actually, has a sort of solution / completion of that arc, rather than just him continuing to be kind of defiant and stubborn about how he views his mother. It's good. It's a good episode. I really like it.
I love this one. I think this one is super funny. Like, I laughed a bunch. They made Burt Reynolds just like so rad, man. He's so like he really is the best. My favorite part of the entire episode, honestly, is when they're in the elevator and they're just talking about, he's like, you should get like a bat pole. And he's like, oh, well, it's $9,000.
$9,000.
Ridiculous. Like, my
favorite is he talks about the quote and he says it's $9,000. And Burt Reynolds just immediately says, well, that's just ridiculous. they're so on the same page about it. It's so funny.
I love it. I love all of it. It's so like funny.
You're preaching to the choir, man. Preaching to the choir. It's so funny.
I love that they name drop like so many like Archer like fans out, and he just like name drops a bunch of shit. When they're in the car, and Burt Reynolds is driving, and he's like, "How do you acting like you've been here before?" He's like, "Well, I shot like a series over here," and he's like, "Oh, I forgot about that." Like he like actually has like a real fan moment, like where he freaks out, like all that stuff is rad.
Yes. It's so good. When he names every Burt Reynolds movie, so many I've never even heard of. and there's so many good jokes about his movies too, that like he gets in on. He's like, he like names a movie. I can't remember which one. And Burt Reynolds is like, oh, He's like, you saw that one? He's like, I thought you were good at it. He's like, you did? He's like, well, I wanted to. He goes, me too. Me too. It's so funny. The action is also super rad in this episode. The car chase stuff is sick.
And then they do the, it's so funny. When he tricks the two cars and they go over the ramp and they fall, and he tricks the other car and it goes over the ramp and it falls. He's like, is that the same footage?
That was amazing because I literally thought that. I watched it. Me too. I'm pretty sure they just used the same footage.
Why are they doing this shot again?
And it's rare for them to do a meta joke that is so fourth wall breaking in Archer. Like they'll do one that generally will still make sense within the context of the episode. This is the one time I can think of where it's like, that is just talking to the audience and not anyone in the world in which they Absolutely. Exist. Like that's yeah. But that was a really funny gag. I liked that a lot. This also introduces one of my favorite runners that I didn't realize was introduced until this season. Was elaborate voicemail hoax.
The voice notes in this entire season are gross.
It's so funny. Elaborate it's so voicemail gross. Hoax.
So did you, this was actually a thing. So did you do these? Did you do one of these? Fucked up voicemail?
I never did one like that. I did for a long time in high school. I just stole Philip Fry's voicemail, which I don't know if you remember it. He says, hey, you've reached Philip, or you reached Fry. If you're calling about the used towels for sale, they're still available for $40 each. So for a lot of high school, that was my voicemail. But I never did like a prank voicemail that was like trying to trick people.
We had
I knew
so
people who did. Yeah.
We had so many. Well, I was the age for it. You were the age for it too, because high school is when you would do something like that too. But like we were like middle school doing that, and like we would do one of my friends, I don't think he knew how to do it, because the way Archer does it is he leaves space for you to have the conversation with yourself.
Yes,
yeah.
It's really smart.
His was, I shit you not, his was, yeah, what up? It's like, nah, man, it's the answer machine. Like, it was just like, I didn't have a chance to even like think it was really you.
Oh, that's so funny.
I had one. And then this is why I never did this again. I had one, and then like I was at my friend's house, and I don't remember what we were doing, but I wasn't by my phone. So like when I came back to my phone, like my mom had called me like 3 or 4 times, and like when I finally called her back, the first thing she was mad at, she was like, what the hell is on your voicemail? And I was like, you never think about when something is actually going on and somebody, you're a kid, and you don't think about when something's actually going on and somebody actually has to speak to you. They don't want to hear that.
True. Like, that's kind of what the whole bit in this one was, is like Mallory is literally calling him because there's a Cuban hit squad out to kill him, and she's like, pick up the phone. And then, but then she's so spiteful about the fact that she got elaborate voicemail hoax that she doesn't tell him about it for a week, which is really fucked up. It's really fucked. But oh my god, this is like, it's such a good episode. I love. Really I literally good. My I first my first note on this episode is, this is such a good episode. That's the first thing I wrote down. It's like, this is so good. And I just love. Mallory, I think the ending is really sweet.
I do too. I do think it's really sweet. I love. Bert tells Archer just so much stuff that like he very much needs to hear. And I think all of that stuff is really rad. And I think it's rad that he internalizes it. And like you said, that he actually like moves forward and like applies it and like tries to have that conversation with his mom. Mallory says some fucking weird shit right before that happens with So like, you think he could go and leave me for a 20-year-old? I'll show him. I'm going to go get a 10-year-old.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that. Yeah. And then like Cheryl, who is already a deranged person, is just immediately like, gross.
Yeah, like, no, like, don't do that.
Like, you know when Cheryl's like got a problem with it?
Right.
That was quite a line. I think what my favorite thing about this episode is, though, is that like Burt Reynolds is just like the father Archer needed in this episode. He's just like a surrogate father figure for the episode. And it's just like, wow, it's crazy how one strong role model in his life could have really gotten through to Archer this quickly and effectively. You know what I mean?
Right.
If he had had a Burt Reynolds raising him, he would have, you know, this is one of the first times we see him internalize and showcase that internalization of what he has learned in one episode. And it's all through Burt Reynolds just being a good dad, good Burt Reynolds dad. Yeah. It's good. What a good episode. Love the man from Jupiter.
Yeah.
All right. Should we move on? You got any more?
I thought it was funny that they thought Ray was like the gay Archer from, was that the first season?
Yeah, from Honeypot. Yeah. A funny episode. Yeah, that's right. That was a fun callback where they're just like, oh yeah, that's definitely him. The only photo they had of him. Oh, but that actually makes sense because he was in Cuba, wasn't he? So that's the photo they would have had of him for the Cuban Hit Squad. Of him doing the Honeypot stuff. Wow. That's good continuity, Archer. Well done.
Killed that.
Second episode of the season, technically fifth. We're going to call it second. Episode 305, El Contador is the next one. I also really love this episode. This is a great Cyril episode. And I love the premise that just like, oh, Cyril's got to be a field agent now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this season in general, he's still Cyril. He's still got a lot of Cyril things going, but I feel like he's a little less of a wet blanket this season. Like he still is, that's still his role, but he's definitely got more wins. Like the first two seasons was kind of shit all over Cyril. He kind of sucks. And this season it's like, oh, he's kind of becoming his own guy and he's like doing, he's doing pretty well at it.
Absolutely. I got like a little mini story with my experience with this episode. So I was watching it and I'm like, wow, he's kind of different here. He's like, he has like his wins and like everybody's like patting him on the back. Like, bro, you actually smoked that. So I wrote, damn, Cyril is kind of rad in this. And while I was typing that, he called Lana Negress. So then my next note says, as soon as I took this note, Cyril called Lana a Negress.
Oh my God. Yeah, he was like going so deep into like the role that he was playing, mm-hmm. and that he just says so much fucked up stuff, which is kind of actually seems to happen a lot over this season, because that also happens later when we'll get to the episode Lo Scandalo. All of the ones that are Spanish words, apparently, which is the
they do that a lot. I've realized that too while watching this season. It's like there was a lot of those last season and everything too.
The one where they have like where they have to help Mallory, which we'll get to later, where they have to help Mallory with the dead body of the prime minister. And then that one is another one where they all start playing like their roles as the rich dinner party. And they're all just really shitty to Lana. It seems to be like a common thing where they all get into character and act like fucking racist assholes. It's like, it's like a recurring thing.
So we got a comment. I think, while recording this, it might have been hours ago. So is that true? Like I didn't fucking
I didn't know that. I only caught the one. I only heard it the one time.
When I heard, because I saw this episode and then hours later I saw that comment. And I was so to the listeners, the comment in question was saying that like for a period in Archer, they call Lon the Negress at least once a season. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that that happens. And that's why I wanted to ask you if that, if like you noticed that, because I didn't.
I definitely don't remember it, because I know watching this episode this time when he said it, I was kind of like, what? Like, yeah. what did they just say? And I was like, I feel like I would have remembered. Like, and the fact that I was so shocked this time, it was like, well, I definitely don't remember them saying it other times right. then, you know?
Okay.
So I guess we got to keep an ear out for season four.
I think the comment acts for like a Negress.
Counter, right? Yeah. We haven't even done the Family Guy counter in months.
The Family Guy, we haven't done the Honky Meter. The Honky Meter. Yeah. I don't know when the next time we're gonna use that, man.
Yeah, I don't know either. I could see Archer saying honky. I bet the show says honky at some point. I wouldn't be surprised.
it shocked the hell out of me when they did it. Fucking Futurama movie was that? Was that big? I think that's Bender's big score. When they did it in Bender's
big
score.
They said it again.
Because Leela said it, and that's what got me. Because the other time it was like Hermes and like bubblegum.
She called the Yeti a snow honky.
Yeah.
That's what it was. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I guess we got to keep an ear out, but don't expect a meter. We're probably not going to put a meter
probably
up.
Not. No.
Oh my god.
Oh, I love that this episode opens literally with Pam covering up weed coughs as beatboxing. I think that's genius. I think that's something that we should all do. And then I'm trying to figure out, because Mallory says, like, all right, stop the damn beatboxing, because last week it was freestyling. And what could she have possibly been doing to cover up whatever she was doing with freestyle? Like, I don't
know. Right. That's so funny. Man, Pam this season is when she really becomes, like, one of my favorite characters.
Pam is rad this entire season.
Yeah, she
and
rules.
And I love it.
Agreed. 100% agreed.
When they're all,
she's
like...
She's just, like, done taking people's shit.
Yeah.
And she's really confident in herself. I love it.
She's so
great.
Rad. When they all get, like... They all get really fucked up because of Krieger, and then she like looks at Ray and turns into a transformer. And
is
then,
that
like,
this episode?
Yeah, that's this one, because she like breaks the toilet.
That's
like,
right.
She like pulls the toilet out the wall and shit. Yeah,
that's right. That's so funny.
Pam is rad this whole season.
Yeah, this episode's fun. That's a great subplot. That's so funny when they're just tripping balls and vomiting all over the fucking bathroom. Mm-hmm. and then Pam, it just goes like insane. She literally just becomes like a Hulk, basically.
Yeah.
And is one of those last lines in the episode is Krieger being like, for the love of God, seal the exit.
Yeah. when he's like recording notes to himself, he's like, one is still at large. And like there's just this big hole in the door.
It's so funny.
This is good. Man.
And then the most dangerous game plotline is really fun too, where like I was like, where I mean, A, I love the bit where Archer hears the tiger and he's just like, that was a tiger. And Lana's like, no, dude, we're not, there's no tigers here. That was probably a jaguar. And he's like, I promise you that was a tiger. And as it turns out, it was a tiger.
Yeah. $1,000, that's a tiger.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And then it turns out they're just animals that he chooses to hunt, which is super mm-hmm. fucked up. And he kills the tiger in front of them. The whole plot line of them doing the most dangerous game thing where they have to escape him hunting them, but then Cyril outsmarts them the whole time is right. It's like a really, like, it's so funny because kind of the whole time you're expecting the rug to be pulled out from under Cyril. You're like, oh, Cyril's doing so well. How is he going to fuck it up? But he really genuinely, he does it. He like, he saves the day. He's like a good field agent.
I really like this one because like he does do it and you're happy for him, but then he starts to like be full of himself. So they take him down a peg. They already won, so they just kind of let bro like fuck Cyril up for a little bit for being an asshole. That's cathartic because it's like, yeah, calm down.
Right. For sure.
Yeah, I love all of it.
My this one also has what I think is my favorite end beat joke of the season, which is after Krieger goes for the love of God, seal the exits. There's kind of a little moment of silence, and Archer just goes, "Did I tell you we met a tiger?" Buddy got murdered. It just ends. I like the using the terminology, like he got murdered, because he did. He got murdered.
He did get murdered.
Got murdered. But yeah, man, that ending beat is one I forgot about, but has always been one of my favorites. It's so funny.
That one's good.
Great episode, El Contador. You got anything else about this one?
Oh man. Well, one, I guess my last note that I didn't say was the part where Archer tells Lana, look on the bright side, and he doesn't say anything. Telling someone to look on the bright side without actually knowing what the bright side is hilarious. That's just a funny concept in general.
It's really funny. It's a turn of phrase.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to the limited, which is one that I've always loved. I've always really liked this episode because it's kind of a little reminiscent of Skytanic. It's like, oh, all of the crew is is traveling together. And it also has a few, it has a couple guest stars that I really like, which is the Canadian guy that they're apprehending is played by a guy named Rob Wells. And then when they bring in the other Mounties, they're played by, Jean-Paul Tremblay and Mike Smith, who are the Trailer Park Boys. I don't know if that's a show you've ever seen.
Oh, shit!
Yeah.
All right, so, like, I haven't seen a lot of Trailer Park Boys, but my roommate Noah fucking loves Trailer Park. So like I would walk in on him watching it sometime, and it is pretty fucking funny.
It's a really funny show. It's not a show I've watched in a long time, but like it's a good premise. It did mockumentary style. It started before it was popular. Like it predates The Office, and it was doing the mockumentary style, and it started as this really tiny, small budget Canadian.
That's
comedy.
What it looked like at first. I was like, are you watching like TLC? Like, what is this? And
it's wild how, like, yeah. And it was just so funny that it like kept going. And then they took a few years off because like it kind of got canceled or ended. And then Netflix saved it for season 9. Like they did like 7 or 8 seasons, and then Netflix saved it. And they did like 5 or 6 more seasons on Netflix in the like 2010s. And the funniest thing about Trailer Park Boys is that every single season is them trying to pull off some kind of scheme for them to make money. Like it's all usually has to do with drugs, but like that's the funny thing is like the main characters will say stuff like, oh, I'm really got to get my shit together this year and start growing some dope, you know, like they're like that to them, that's getting their shit together. It's like I gotta grow my own dope. And every single season ends with them getting caught and sent to jail for whatever crimes they've been committing all season. Every season. So literally end of every season they go to jail, beginning of every season is them getting out of jail.
And
since every single one,
I love it.
And then one of my
is there an animated season? I think Noah was
they did
me
do some
like
animated
that.
Stuff. I've never watched the animated stuff. Trailer Park Boys. I think they just continued the show in animated format, which I guess I don't know. Maybe we talk about it on here. If it's animated, it's a cartoon that curses. Let's see. They did 2 seasons. They've done 2 seasons of the animated series, and they came out 2019, 2020, so there might still be going. Maybe there's another season.
Wow.
And it literally carries on from the end of the original run of the non-animated version.
Jeez.
It just takes place after that. So it's pretty interesting. What a crazy show. One of my favorite this is just such a small dumb joke that I remember, but in season 9, I remember there was this plot line where Ricky, who's the guy Rob Wells, he plays the main like guy who's main Canadian dude in this episode. He plays a character named Ricky, and he's got this goldfish that he's obsessed with named Goldie. And he's just like, he just hangs out with his goldfish. And there's this one mockumentary sequence where he's like, he's talking to the camera and he's like, "Oh yeah, man, I'm having a rough morning. Last night I just got real fucked up with Goldie." And then and then they start showing clips and he's like blowing bong rips into the fishbowl. And he's like pouring liquor into the fishbowl.
Yeah.
And then as it turns out is that like he's so attached to this goldfish that his other friends have been making sure that he doesn't realize he's continually killing his goldfish, and they've been replacing it over and over again. It's just such a funny premise. But that's like the line that I just always think about. It's like, "Oh, I was getting real fucked up with Goldie last night."
It's so funny.
Oh, good show. I like Trailer Park Boys. Maybe we should look into that for the pod. It's a cartoon that curses. So, but this episode, very funny, all takes place on the train, which again, Skytanic vibes. It's like the whole ISIS team is together traveling on this thing. And then also though, great Cheryl stuff with how she's got five of her cars attached to the back of the train, which I really like. I really like the more that they like elaborate on how absolutely loaded Cheryl is. And like the fact that she just doesn't need to have a job. She could just do whatever she wants.
So we're gonna get there eventually, obviously, but in one of the last episodes this season, there's that stuff with Cheryl and Barry, and
that's right,
they're trying to figure out where to go, and then she proposes a hotel and Barry says he doesn't have any money. And I was like, "Oh, well, Cheryl does." And then she just doesn't say anything, though. But I'm like, what the fuck?
That's so funny. But it's very Cheryl. Like, even though it makes no sense logically, I'm just like, well, yeah, of course Cheryl wouldn't.
You couldn't do that with any of the other characters, but Cheryl is fine.
That's so funny. One of my favorite Cheryl jokes in this one is when she's like, "Oh, my God, we might beat the record to Ottawa." I know that probably doesn't mean much to you since you don't own a railroad, but it's actually a pretty big deal. just like casually being like, "I know you don't own a railroad," but that's really funny to me. And then it's just like, also just like a cool train is such a good, it's just such a cool setting. It's such a cool setting for this kind of stuff.
I'm so used to, every time I see a train, I'm so used to thinking that they're just going to do Snowpiercer, but they didn't do Snowpiercer. Which I'm also cool with.
I think this came out before the Snowpiercer movie, I'm pretty sure.
That would track. Yeah. I think this one's good. I like it. There isn't an episode this season that I don't like, but it wasn't as engaging for me as the first two. Because the first two, I was like, I was in there.
I actually agree.
Some good shit.
The funny thing is that going into this season, in my brain, I was like, "Oh, The Limited is maybe my favorite episode of the season." And then after watching the first two and getting to this one, I was like, "Oh, I like the first two better. Like this is a good episode. There's a lot I really like about it. I really love the setting, but it's definitely like, it was definitely a little more elevated in my memory than it was. Maybe it's just because it was a memorable episode for me. And that's like, I just remembered it more. So I was like, "Oh yeah, The Limited is a good one." But I liked it. I liked The Man from Jupiter and El Contador both more than The Limited. But it's good. It's still a good episode.
This starts it. This is at least when I noticed it. A through line that lasts through the whole season where everybody just keeps telling Archer he's a racist.
That's right.
I thought it was just here, but then they because keep Canadians, doing it. Yeah. Yeah. Not even just a Canadian. The dude that works on the train is black. And
right,
they're like, I forget what he's talking to him and Lana about, but then like they both kind of look at him. He's like, "Oh no, don't make this weird." She says, "Weird? Like, what do you even mean by that?"
Right. Yeah, and then the Canadians are giving him a hard time because they think that they murdered him. Right.
Yeah,
he's just like, "Welcome to America," you know? that is like a big thing in this season, isn't it? It pretty much just keeps going through to the end of the season.
Right. Yeah.
The other joke, I also just love everything with the ocelot in this episode.
I do
when
too.
he goes back to see my favorite is when he hears it and he goes, "Is that Babu?" Yeah, and he just runs. He just runs out of frame, and then he yells, "Lana, Lana!" And she's like, "What? He remembers me." He's so excited to see Babu. It's great. I love that shit. Archer has such a weird connection with animals. He just loves animals.
He does, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And this is the first time we saw Babu because in the last episode, we just heard him the last time he was in it.
Right. And even then, we only see him for like a quick shot. The rest of the time, he's
two shots.
Two? God, I noticed the one where Archer sees. And then the rest, I think, is just like tail.
You see the tail, and then the final beat of the episode, he pops up in the back of the cop car.
You're right.
Which is funny, because he's just like having, Archer's just having a conversation with the ocelot, and he's just being sarcastic or whatever. He's like, "Yes, I was, you fox-eared asshole." He's just like, it's like even Archer can be an asshole to his new friend, ocelot. Yeah, this is a good one. You got anything else about the limited?
Mm-mm, nah. So I got this one.
Well, let's move on. Good apple. Let's move on to seven. It's probably seven. Drift Problem. Drift Problem is a pretty cool episode. This is Archer's birthday. Archer has a birthday and his mom gets him a really fancy ass spy car. By Dodge. A lot of funny meta humor about Dodge in this one.
How much did Dodge
They just have to say Dodge over and over. Yeah, how much did Dodge pitch in? Not as much as you'd think. which is a funny... That's a funny fourth wall breaking line that also works in the context of the show. So that's good stuff. Really good action in this episode. I love the action. Really cool car chase stuff, like the grappling hook stuff. Him like ripping the other car out of the parking garage with his car is crazy.
Yeah.
But like, I think the craziest part about this episode is like the revelation and flashback to like how Mallory treats Archer. We get more of that. Like she stole it. We learned that she stole his bike that he left out and then paddled him for it with the damn ping pong paddle, which is, we know, is like a long standing thing that's affected him deeply.
And then never gave it back.
And they never gave it back. And that, that shot where he's sitting on his bed and like young Mallory opens the door and just goes, "Where's your bike?" And he just starts crying. And she goes, "That's what I thought." And then you just see her pull the paddle out. It's like fucking scary. Jeez, man. Yes, it's menacing. It's really fucked up. But that is like, that's like kind of the core. It's like the core of Archer and his weird, fucked up, like everything.
I don't even remember taking this note, but my last note for the episode literally says Mallory is an awful parent.
Oh yeah, yes.
I guess that's 100%. Why. I guess because I think the final nail in the coffin was when Lana said, "So like, what did you do, like when you gave it back?" She said, "Gave it back." I was like, "Oh, what the fuck?" Like I think that was my last straw. I was like, "All right, this is."
It's always interesting when like Lana, who's obviously received like the brunt of so much of Archer's just like shittiness and abuse. Even when she can be like, "Oh my God," like it's when she's shocked by the things that Mallory has done to Archer, it's like, I feel like when you really start to understand like, oh, this is all why Archer is real fucked up. You know what I mean? Like even Lana can see how he became that way, you know, and it's all because of one Mallory Archer and a lack of a father figure. I'd say the combination of Mallory being awful and him having nobody else. is pretty rough. Fun episode though. This was just fun. Like I this is a fun episode, but I didn't like, I don't know, outside of the Mallory Archer flashback stuff and like that dynamic stuff, it was mostly just fun. Like I didn't have much else to say about it.
Yeah. I definitely agree. I like when Archer's watching that thing. Telling him like how rad the car is, and then like when it starts talking about like the liquor, he just yells over it like he's that excited where he's just like screaming like over it. I thought that was like that killed me.
Yeah,
and
I like
this,
it. Yeah.
Uh, there's a callback from, there's a crazy callback from, what fucking episode is that calling back from? It's one of the ones we just talked about, but when they go to try to find the car, and then the guy starts to beat Archer up because he got in his face, and then Cyril says, right in the head and ass. Like, because he says that a couple episodes ago.
That's right. Now he says it. Right. Oh, that's so funny. I like when they don't really draw attention to the callbacks. They just throw them in there. Yeah.
You could have literally missed that if you weren't like watching.
I did.
Because it's in like, there's like, it's like a quick shot. There's like laughing over it and everything like that. You know what I mean? Like, there's like stuff going on. So, yeah, I don't know. It's really clever though. But I agree. This is a really fun one. Not really many analysis points aside from the fact that like Mallory just like raised a kid really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. There is like, I think one of my favorite things, like just fun comedy wise, is that as soon as he goes out with the car to like take it out, his form of like taking his spy car out is like getting in a high speed police chase and having them all crash behind him,
right, yeah,
and like literally just like destroying the cops and getting away. That's like, oh, I'm going to take the car out for a spin. That's what that means for Archer. It's pretty funny. But yeah, it's a good, fun episode with, I think, some important backstory beats, but maybe not my favorite of the season, but a fun one, certainly a fun one. Let's move on to the next one. You down?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's talk about Lo Scandalo, which is another pretty good Mallory episode, actually. This is the one where Mallory basically, well, there's all lots of twists and turns along the way, which I think was what makes this episode fun. But Mallory basically calls in ISIS because she says that some assassins came in and killed the prime minister of Italy, who she's been having an ongoing sexual relationship with. And so he's literally like in a gimp suit, shot five times in a chair. Mm-hmm. And basically, as the episode goes on, we realize that we learn that Mallory was the one who killed him, and that the whole thing was her setting up a way for her to have people help her dispose of the body and have her get away with this murder of the literal Italian prime minister, which is pretty insane. Right. Pretty insane Mallory episode. That's bonkers. But I think what's most fun about it is like the detectives coming in, trying to figure out what happened, and them like escaping any real scrutiny from the detective by, A, pretending to be a rich dinner party, and then also Krieger just doing weird Krieger things. God, Krieger is so creepy this season.
Yeah.
Creepier than ever this season.
Krieger bodies the cover up in this when the fucking when like the detective comes over.
Yeah,
and like you're like on the edge of your seat, son. Like he's going through every room and everything like that, and you're like, oh shit. And when he finally gets to the bathroom, you're like, okay, yeah, it's over. Like,
it's done.
Like, this
it's
is
done
it.
For.
Yeah. And then he kills that. He bodies that shit. He does. So good.
Yeah. And then it's so fucked up, but the fact that he just basically gives everyone a piece of the dude's body in like a meat packaging thing is like, here you go. Here's your gift at the end of the party.
Right.
And everyone disposes of the body separately is pretty fucked up.
I love the, he says, did you find the, and then they cut her off. And then he says, yeah, I found it. Can I keep it?
Oh man. Yeah, this is like, and it's also interesting because it's like another bottle episode. Like this, we also bottle episode. That was another dinner party type of thing,
Which was the last time that they were at her house.
Right. And it always has to do with Mallory and some other like important world leader. Something like, you know, it's like it's interesting that does make sense. Like, it makes sense for a bottle episode in the context of a spy show where they have all these international implications. Mm-hmm. But I also just like that they continue to reveal, like, Mallory's just got like all of these ridiculous sexual exploits across the globe with like important people, head of the KGB, the prime minister of Italy, Burt Reynolds. Like, it's just like the list goes on. It's pretty funny.
Oh, there's a line early on in this that like hits on something that like we've danced around in these past Archer episodes. Is I think Mallory says, what year do you think this is? And Archer says, yeah, good question.
That's so funny. I was thinking about that again this season because I was noticing that like their computers have phones attached to them. they have computers that can take them to the internet and they're always searching stuff up on the internet, but they literally have the phones attached to the computer, like a landline phone. It's Krieger, just all so out of time.
Krieger takes a selfie with the dead body in this. And I noticed that and I was like, okay, right. So now I'm really confused.
Well, they definitely have all modern technology. It's just like aesthetically they showcase things as really old retro. And
Burt Reynolds is designed like he would have been the age that he was when this came out. Like, you know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff too. So yeah,
that's true. That's like a modern thing. It's so interesting, but it's fun. I think it is. I think it really gives the show a lot of character though. And like, you know, not drawing attention to it makes it fun. Cause honestly, for the first, when I was originally watched the show, it wasn't even something I thought about. It wasn't even something I thought about. And then once you really start to look into it, you're like, oh yeah, everything looks like it's from a 60s spy show. Like, there's,
that's how I feel about that's how I feel about the location, because I didn't think about it. So I don't know if my ears started perking up this season or what, but they bring up the fact that they're in New York a lot this season, to the point where like I'm like, oh wait, this happens in New York. Like, I just didn't. Right. I don't know. For the past two, my brain just didn't process that.
They don't really showcase the like giant skyscraper aspect of New York. You know what I mean? It's kind of just set where they are and then it's all mostly like street level. Like, sometimes you get stuff that are on big buildings. Like, I guess he like harpoons and grapples into buildings sometimes in the first couple seasons. But like, they don't really ever showcase the New York skitty skyline or anything, you know?
Right.
But I do think one of the reasons your ears perked up a lot about it is because the next episode, Bloody Ferlin, says it like, they say it like 50 times in it. It's all they constantly talk about it. You got anything else about Lo Scandalo before we move on to that episode?
Nah, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. I have a feeling that this might be the end of the first half of our episode. We've been talking for an hour, 15 minutes. We just covered half the episodes.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe it'll happen before now. I won't say it. I'll leave it up to Mikey. We'll see how far we get.
Let's do it.
I'm not going to call our shot. Let's just move on.
Yeah.